This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. Today, we're going to do part three of the greatest offensive players in NFL history. Joining me are my friends Arnie Chapman and Dave DiPaola.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great Scott.
We're getting off the list here. Let's get back to that list.
Okay, at guard, they only have four guards picked on the 2010
The other list only had four.
Yeah. They have John Hanna, Jim Parker. Those two guys are going to make every list. Gene Upshaw. And now they have Larry Allen, who you were talking about earlier.
He was tremendous, Larry Allen. The first memory I have of Larry Allen was the 94 championship game against the 49ers that the Cowboys lost. Uh-huh. Larry Allen was playing in that game with a bum leg. And I just watched a video of this young kid. He was really on the ball, this guy. You should have seen all the homework he did. He did a video what's his name? What we were talking about earlier. It was really nasty. And he was saying that was the year he got injured in the car accident, Eric Williams. And he was saying if Eric Williams played in that game, there was a very good chance the Cowboys would have won. Emmitt Smith had a bad hamstring. He never finished the game. If you remember that game, Blair Thomas finished the game at running back. But Larry Allen had a bum leg. I don't know why they didn't replace him, because they had a guy on the bench, Ron Stone, who they ended up trading to the Giants, who was actually a pretty decent offensive lineman. They could have put him in. Aikman was under duress that whole game. And then that crazy play. But Larry Allen turned out to be... There was a clip of Parcells when he was coaching the Cowboys. You could look it up. And he's actually going at Larry Allen in practice. And he's saying, no, this guy doesn't want to practice hard. And... there's a clip of Parcells saying, you know, oh, you're going to be tired of me, boy. He was saying, when I get done, you know, you're going to have enough of me. But, and then he takes him aside and he talks to him and you can hear it all. It's all on mic. And he's saying, you know, what are you getting upset for? You know, sometimes you're going to get beat. Everybody gets beat, even the best ever. He goes back in there. But he was saying that Larry Allen was going through something there that, you know, and Parcells kind of, you know, it's a great clip. It's on one of these Cowboy features about Bill Parcells. I'll send it to you, Mark. I'll find it.
I remember seeing some of that.
I think it's called Bill Parcells' Last Ride, but he's talking about Larry Allen. Right. And even as great as he was, he had that downtime there.
Yeah, and he was pushing him. He was pushing him in practice.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes, he was.
So they got, they only have three centers, same three guys, Jim Otto.
Imagine that?
Yep. In fact, they did this number 1 to 100, right? The NFL Network. They don't have a center listed until number 63. They've got 62 players. They've got 62 players picked, and none of them are a center. There's no center. Finally, at number 63, they picked Jim Otto. And then they picked the other two, Mike Webster and Mel Hein. So they didn't think too highly of centers, I guess. Tight end, they have John Mackey. They have Tony Gonzalez. They have Mike Ditka, Kellen Winslow, and they have Ozzie Newsome.
Yeah, Newsome was great. Yep. We haven't talked about him, but he really was.
He played for a long time, too, right?
And, yes. He was very good with the Browns. The Browns had a really good team, I think, in 81, 82, when Sam Rotigliano was there coaching. And they had Brian Sipe at quarterback. And Ozzie Newsome was their tight end. And, you know, he's still involved in football. What is he, with the Ravens, Arnie?
I don't know if he retired from there, but yeah, he was as of really recently. I can look that up.
Well, the Ravens were the Browns, right? The Ravens were the Browns, the original Browns.
Yep. Yeah, I think he still is the front office for him there. I mean, he was the architect of the Ravens when they first started, I think, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, right.
All right. I guess I should take that back. Maybe he was part of it, but then it says that he became the NFL's first African-American general manager in 2002.
There you go. Yeah, he played, 78 to 90, okay? 662 receptions for 7,980 yards. And he had three Pro Bowls and just one first-team All-Pro, but he was very, very, very good. I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame. You know? I mean, so I could see that being in that list for, you know, Dave Casper's not on that 2010 list, though. And yet, what's his name? Has him, your buddy there, Mark has him. It's amazing, isn't it? How that works, you know?
But the guy that Arnie must have seen here at tight end is Gonzalez.
He was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically changed what the perception of a tight end could be in the league.
Right. He put up some big numbers,
he was
right?
Very, very good.
Probably similar to how when Ditka came out, totally changed what it meant to be a tight end. This guy took it to, you know, another level. I mean, I know there were, generation type of players that made a change. But, yeah, he was the first one where it was really okay, this is a former basketball player, and he's a receiver, essentially. We can turn him into that.
The little that I've seen of NFL in recent years, I would take Gonzalez over Gronkowski. What do you think, Arnie?
See, the one thing about Gronkowski, though, is he would be more of your all-around tight end compared to a Gonzalez. Gonzalez was more receptions. Gronkowski, he was inline blocker as well.
Well, we got the final. Yeah,
of recent years, Mark.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to say that the top three would probably be Gonzalez and Gronkowski, and you could probably throw Jason Witten in there. He was that good.
Right.
You know, Witten was great. But then let me talk about Jim Otto for a second. Bill Berge was saying that Jim Otto had the greatest, they called it a one-inch or a one-foot punch. He had the greatest recoil. He said he could come out and block you with more force than anybody in a tight area. Like he came from here and then out. He said the impact was tremendous within a foot distance. You know, wow. That's what he used to. We were talking about Bill Berge. He was pretty good with the Eagles. Remember him?
Bill Berge was very good. Started with the Bengals, right?
Yeah, he was talking about Jim Otto.
Yeah. That's quite a compliment.
He said that He was playing a game against the Raiders, and Madden was yelling about something, and Berge says, he's too slow, coach. He was talking about Jim Otto. Right. So then another time we played him, a year later, he goes, he came up, and he just blind. He said, and he let me. He goes, and I was pretty much out, I was awake. He goes, and Madden came over. He was on the field, and he said, how's Jim Otto now? He says, pretty good, he says.
That's a good story. I love those stories. Well, we got the final list here. The 2019 100th anniversary list. They got, we'll start with the offensive line. They got Otto, these three guys at center are on every list, right? Jim Otto, Mike Webster, Mel Hine. Mel Hine, yep. Then they got, they got Dermoni Dawson. I had a hard time pick up my own team, I couldn't decide between, and these were both of these centers were for the Dolphins. I couldn't decide between Jim Langer or Dwight Stevenson. And I picked Langer because he had the longer career than Stevenson, but I don't know. I think Paul Zimmerman might have changed my mind. And you know who else? They interviewed Howie Long. And they asked him who was the best offensive lineman. And he said, without hesitation, he said, Dwight Stevenson. That,
really?
From Howie Long, yep. You have any of more of those lists, Dave? Where players talk
the thing about- my gripe with the, not a gripe, but the 2019 this latest list, the 2019 list. Here's my thing with this. They added in special teams.
Yeah, you're right.
So they
about
have
that.
Stenerud and Vinatieri.
Too many.
Ray Guy and Leckler, the punters. Devin Hester and Billy White Shoes Johnson. So those six guys. Then they brought in some of these old timers that we talked about before. Dutch Clark, Carl Hubbard, yeah. Fortman, Bill Hewitt. And I'm not saying leave the guys off or, I didn't see him play. But to me, this doesn't make sense to me. The guys that got taken off the list from 2010, you're going to tell me Sean Leckler's going to go on this list as one of the 100 greatest players. But you're going to take off Tarkington, Young, Aikman, Dorsett. Okay? I mean, it's insane kind of to me, but it is what it is. That's how the list works.
I think,
so they didn't have those guys in 2010.
I think
so they had to make room for them.
I think you make a really good point there. I think what they should have done is picked 100. They should have picked 100 players and then added, and now here's the special teams guys. So that way they didn't have to take off, the big name players, like you said. I think that's a good point.
Yes.
Pick too many, like you said, six special team. They should have just picked 100 and then said, okay, here's the special team guys as an add-on.
Here's an interesting one, Mark, from the offensive line. In 2010, Dwight Stevenson isn't there. But in 2019, he is.
Uh-huh.
They added him in.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I didn't have him on my list. I had Jim Langer instead. But then, after I started hearing some of the other players talk, I heard what Howie Long had to say. He said he was the best offensive lineman he ever faced.
Yeah, well, him and this Randall McDaniel got added in 2019, and I looked him up. He had a lot of, you watch these guys play, and I think what happens today is there's so much stuff with football. I mean, I don't know if this makes sense to either of you guys, but anyway, getting back to this guy, 12 Pro Bowls, 7-time All-Pro first team. That's Randall McDaniel. But my point is there's so much information about football now with fantasy football and crazy you're watching highlights all night long. You can go to 5 in the morning. They just keep replaying stuff. I'm not kidding. And so back then, when a guy really stood out, like, in other words, it's kind of stuck out on your mind more because there was less.
Right.
And then when a guy was like, but Randall McDaniel, as great as he was, and I was watching football closely all those years that he played, it just never caught my eye for some reason because you're inundated with all this other stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you kind of just don't pick up on it, I think. I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys, but...
No, that's a good point. And then you take a guy like... and the guards, they have Dan Fortman, who played in the 1930s and 1940s. And, how much footage is there of Dan Fortman? You can't go really back...
I looked him up earlier before we came on, and he only played from 1936 to 1943.
Yeah, that's
so
the
he
point.
Played
only 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, they had an all-pro team back then.
Right.
6 of those 8 years, he was all-pro, so maybe that's what they're going by.
Yeah. Must be, because...
he was a guard, Mark. He was, right. He was a guard at 6 foot, 210 pounds. He was a guard.
Yeah, I could believe it. And then, you know, they got these two seem to be on every list. They're always the top two. John Hannah, Jim Parker. They got Gene Upshaw. They've got Larry Allen, Randall McDaniel. They got Bruce Matthews, the guy they didn't have on this list. And I think it's a glaring omission, is Larry Little. They do not have Larry Little on this list. I would take Larry Little as one of my top guards. You know, if you look at those films, look at some of those Super Bowl teams the Dolphins had, and watch Larry Zonka running the ball. Who's the guy that's out in front of him every time?
Yes.
As the pulling guard, yep. Larry Little. I thought Larry Little was tremendous.
He wasn't one of the guys going to the XFL, was he, Mark, or no?
Oh, the WFL, you mean, right?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, he didn't. Yep. No, he didn't go.
No, he wasn't one.
No. I thought he was tremendous.
You know, they didn't have Forrest Gregg in there either, but
who didn't have Forrest Gregg?
Is Gregg in there in 2019? Is he on the list?
Yep, he's on the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to touch on what's his name there? One of the guards that they that we were talking about. I lost my train of thought, but. Like you said, Mark, how much footage is there on the, but you know, I guess these guys, whoever made the list, I'd like to know who made the 2019 list, like who was involved in all that. I think there was coaches. I think Bill Belichick, he's on all the shows. When they do that 2019 list.
Yeah.
Belichick is one of the main guys, I think.
Yeah. He seems to know his football history. Belichick.
He's a historian. Yes, you're right about that.
Yeah.
Oh, John Hannah is what I wanted to talk about. I watched some clips on him. And if you look at this guy was like a tank. If you watch anything on John Hannah, look it up. His legs are, he was getting all his, they were absolutely massive. Massive, his thighs. He was coming around the corner. He was leveling people, just running them over like a locomotive. It was unbelievable. He's on all the lists. He's one of the best ever. They had him on the cover of Sports Illustrated once. The greatest lineman of all time. Do you remember that, Mark?
Yeah, I have that Sports Illustrated.
Yep.
He was a shot putter. In college.
Oh, was he?
Yep. And I think he continued.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a shot putter. So that might explain, you know, what you were saying with his legs were very big and strong.
Yep. There you go.
Shot putter. So at tackle, they have Forrest Gregg, Anthony Munoz. Roosevelt Brown is a guy you don't really hear enough about for the Giants. Art Shell. They got Jonathan Ogden. And a new addition, they have Walter Jones. From the Seahawks.
We talked about him.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. Walter Jones. But I think Roosevelt Brown is a guy that doesn't get mentioned enough for the Giants.
Was that Mark?
I think the guy that doesn't get mentioned enough, Roosevelt Brown.
He was on one of the other lists, though, that we mentioned, I think.
Yeah. You just don't really hear enough about. He does make the list, but they don't really talk about him that much. But then again, you know, there you go again. He played into the 60s, but I think the majority of his peak years were in the 1950s. And, you know, like Arnie was saying, they didn't talk a lot about offensive lineman in the 1950s.
No. You know, Mike Ditka talked about that. Uh-huh. He said, you know, when I played, we were an extension of the offensive line.
Right.
That's what he said. Tight end was an extension of the offensive line. And, like, you know, that's why, like Arnie said earlier, he kind of changed things with the pass catching.
Right.
You know?
Yep. And speaking of tight ends, they have John Mackey. They have Mike Ditka. They have Gronkowski. They have Winslow. They have Tony Gonzalez. The guy that doesn't seem to make these lists is Jackie Smith.
Unbelievable.
I gotta have Jackie Smith. You know, if I'm picking tight ends, I gotta have Jackie Smith in my top five without a doubt. I got
a list here, Mark. From Jack Ham. Uh-huh. Jack Ham selected his best tight ends. He's got one of Arnie's guys on there. At number 10, number 9, he's got Charlie Sanders on there from the Lions. But his top guy, believe it or not, you're not going to believe this. This is Jack Ham now. And I know he played against this guy at least once a year. He's got Russ Francis up there. He's got him ahead of Kellen Winslow.
Wow. He's got
Charlie Young, Ozzie Newsome, and Dave Casper to round out his top five. And then he's got Mackey Ditka. You're not going to believe this one. At number 8, he's got Jay Novacek.
Really?
This is Jack Ham.
Wow.
Charlie Sanders, and then at number 10, Bob Trumpy. Remember Bob Trumpy became an announcer?
Yeah.
He played for the Bengals, yeah.
Yeah, he was a very good tight end.
But that was his list.
Again, no Jackie Smith.
Imagine that.
No Jackie Smith.
No, Mark says again. Nothing.
That's unbelievable. I don't understand.
He's one of your favorites, Mark.
Yes, Jackie Smith was tremendous. And I know he always killed Dallas when he was with the Cardinals. Always had a big game against Dallas. You know, they show that one clip all the time where he carried half the team on his back. He was tremendous. I think, you know, after he caught the ball, he was like a locomotive. They couldn't tackle him. He was knocking people all over. They couldn't tackle him.
I'm looking at him here now, Mark. He was ahead of his time. He had a lot of accolades here. 5 Pro Bowls. He had 400. I mean, this was when they weren't passing the ball a lot. The guy played from 1963. To 1978, 15 big ones.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he was best remembered for that catch that he didn't make in the Super Bowl, but...
Yeah, that's a shame.
He was one of these real humble guys that I met him at the Hall of Fame when he got in, because he got in with Randy White. They got in the same year. I went to that thing, and I met him at the hotel, and he was just one of these really, you know, low-key guys... You know, you would never even, probably never even talked about, you know, football all that much. But you could tell when during his interviews, he just seems like a really, really down-to-earth guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. I met him, too. I got a picture of him with my son. And I had the same feeling, you know, just seemed very humble, low-key, you know. Like you wouldn't even know that he played in the NFL.
Okay. He had almost 8,000 yards receiving. I mean, that was big for that time.
Oh yeah, and he had no weaknesses. He could block, and he could run. He could certainly run once he caught the ball. That, you know, those defensive backs, they would accidentally trip. You know, like when Earl Campbell was coming at him. That's how they were.
Oh boy,
with Jackie. Oh, I tripped. Because they didn't want to get in his way. He would have just pancaked them. He ran them right over.
You know, Randy White gave the speech that day. Like I said, they both got in the Hall of Fame. And you could tell it wasn't in his notes. And Randy White said, you know, Jackie Smith, you know, it was an honor playing with you that year. He, you know, because he knew he was getting a lot of flack for the dropped pass and everything. But he actually threw that in there. You could tell it was off the cuff, too, you know. It was really nice of him to say that. But I'm looking at his I'm looking at his stats. We're talking about 1964 here now. He had a run from 64 to 69. 47, 41, 45, 56, 49, 43 receptions. That was kind of almost unheard of back then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was tremendous. Wide receiver, they got Jerry Rice, Lance Allworth, Don Hutson, Steve Largent, Raymond Berry, Paul Warfield, Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
They got Elroy Hirsch, Crazy Legs. They got, who they don't have? Well, they got Randy Moss on here. I can't believe they don't have Charlie Taylor on here. Charlie Taylor from the Redskins. I think I'd have to take him.
You might take me over Randy Moss, Mark. I don't know.
I probably would. I would definitely take Charlie Taylor over Randy Moss.
Well, I got Charlie Taylor here at number four. Receivers I admire the most by Lance Allworth. He's got Charlie Taylor at number four. You're not going to believe it. He threw Mike Ditka in there. I guess he's considering any type of guy that catches the ball. He's got him in there at number five. He's got Rice at number one. I hate to break the news to you. He's got Moss at number two. This is Lance Allworth now.
Uh-huh.
And he's got Don Hutson at number three. And he's got Elroy Hirsch, who was really a running back, kind of. Wasn't he? No, was he a receiver? He was a receiver.
I guess they called him flanker back then.
Yeah. He's got Lynn Swann, Paul Warfield, and Kellen Winslow to round out his list. That's Lance Allworth now. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah. He killed Charlie
you
Taylor.
You go back
killed,
and forth.
Remember Charlie Taylor killed Dallas in that the 1972 NFC. They had Charlie Waters playing cornerback. They had Charlie Waters covering Charlie Taylor. He killed Charlie Waters in that game. I think he got hurt in that game, right?
I remember it well. It was like 26-3 or something.
It was 10-3. Going into the fourth quarter.
In the beginning,
10-3. And then they just...
right.
Yeah. Charlie Taylor killed him. Now, here's a guy I want to ask Arnie about, because I don't know a lot about him, because I haven't really watched. Larry Fitzgerald. Did you see him, Arnie?
Oh yeah. He was definitely a receiver in my generation that just, it didn't matter if he was covered or not. The guy's hands were like glue.
And he was with the Cardinals?
Yeah, his entire career was with the Cardinals. Yeah.
So he was known for not dropping passes, right?
I mean, his hands were just so strong, it didn't matter where he was at. And he had, like any other receiver, he had the route tree, he was able to get open and everything. But what I remember is the strong hands catching it in traffic, willing to go over the middle and all that other kind of thing. It wasn't necessarily the deep passes. He was more of a across the field kind of a guy.
Uh-huh. Well, he made the list.
Mark.
Yep.
Mark, I'm telling you, it was tremendous. 17 years he played, Mark, I think. Let me just look it up. Hang on. 2004 to 2020, Fitzgerald.
Uh-huh.
And he was, I remember him because I had him on a couple of my fantasy teams over the years. He was only first team All-Pro once, but don't forget, there's a lot of competition there, but 11 Pro Bowls and just all kinds of receiving yardage. I mean, his numbers are really, I mean, and a very nice guy, too, off the field, like a real top-notch, a real gentleman. 17,000, almost 17,500 receiving yards. Unbelievable. 1,432 receptions. He must He must have surpassed Terrell Owens in some of these categories, I would think.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, 263 games played. You know, just he was great every year. Just, you know, just based on just fantasy football, Mark, which you're, every year you have a draft, and you know, you'd go, somebody would always draft Larry Fitzgerald, like the last 5 years of his career, and some guy would make a comment, oh, he's on the geriatric team and this guy. But every year he'd be great. Every year he'd contribute. It was unbelievable. You know, they make you eat your words, you know. So he was great.
Yeah, plus he was willing, even though he was a receiver known for his catches, he actually was willing to get in there and block, kind of like the old school type of receiver too.
Yeah. Going back, Mark, to Charlie Taylor before you go, I found a list here from Willie Brown. The toughest receivers to cover. Okay? And he had number one, Lance Allworth. Charlie Taylor at number two. Rice, Warfield, and Joyner. That was his top five. Willie Brown, toughest receivers to cover.
And he probably hardly ever played against Charlie Taylor because he was AFL.
Right? That's right.
Willie Brown
exactly.
Played the AFL. Wow.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, I remember that game, 1972 championship game. He killed the Cowboys. Quarterbacks. They got, what I like about the 2019 list is they didn't go overboard with the running backs and quarterbacks. They picked 10 quarterbacks. They got Johnny Unitas, Joe Montana. They got Sammy Baugh. They got Tom Brady, Dan Marino, Peyton Manning. They got Staubach, Otto Graham, John Elway. They got Dave's favorite quarterback, Brett Favre. The guy they don't have, on here. I know you want to talk about Brett Favre. The guy they don't have on here that I got to put in is Bart Starr. I can't see how you could keep him off the list. Other than,
well, I got two lists here, Mark. The smartest quarterbacks is selected by, of all people, George Blanda.
Uh-huh.
And he's got Bart Starr at number two behind Otto Graham. He's got Montana at three. And of all people at number four, he's got Bradshaw, who they said wasn't too bright. Remember they used to say that?
Right.
And Unitas at number five. That's George Blanda. He also had Van Brocklin, Bobby Lane, Elway, Staubach, and Bob Waterfield on there. That was George Blanda for smarts.
Right.
For smartest. But the toughest quarterbacks to defend,
yeah,
that's this list I got here by Sam Huff. He's also got Bart Starr on there, number seven. So
yep,
he's on all these players' lists. I got a couple more, but Starr's at number seven for toughest quarterbacks to defend by Sam Huff. And the number one he's got is Johnny Unitas. And
uh-huh,
number two on that list was Sonny Jurgensen, who I talked about as being a great thrower.
Right.
Yep. So that's Sam Huff.
Right.
See, the we talked about it before. The quarterback position, there's so many facets to it that it's hard to pick. But, you know, those ones I always go with, I still stick with my list of all time, the top five or six I told you about before. But there's just different things to – there's different facets of the game to, you know, don't forget, a lot of these guys called their own plays.
That's
and then
right,
later on, the coaches were calling the plays for them. So that's a big thing right there, you know, but that's where the smarts come in.
Right.
Where you're saying, the guys today, they're not even calling their own plays. They'd probably be lost, some of these guys, if they had to call their own plays and figure out, you know, really, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
It's the greatest athletes that they are, some of these guys. Something like all of a sudden now, he's been thrust into the limelight. Arnie will know about this. The kid from the Chicago Bears. He couldn't get out of his own way 5 weeks ago. Now all of a sudden, They're talking about him like he's all these quarterbacks rolled up into one. Once they force this guy to stop running, which they eventually will, he's just not that good of a passer. I'm sorry, he's not. You know?
The guy that doesn't get mentioned enough, in my opinion, is Sammy Baugh. Sammy Baugh.
No, he's not on any of the lists, Mark.
That's shocking.
Yep.
He's on the 2019 list.
He's on the 75th all-time team, Sammy Baugh. They did it. I'll never forget it. You look up that 75 all-time team. There's a whole video of it. And they're talking about Sammy Baugh. The man's cursing up a storm. It's phenomenal. Okay? And he's talking about when you go out there, you know, you got to be the best. And he's swearing. And he's talking. It shows a picture of him throwing a ball through a tire. And it shows him getting off a play. He was another guy that had a lot of star power where he was a big draw. And it shows him getting off of a plane. And he's talking about, you know, like if you don't have a lot of confidence, you know, you're not going to be able to. He was just, I can listen to his interviews all day long. It's tremendous. It's almost like listening to Trump. It's crazy, some of the stuff he's talking about, but it's great. You know, all in the same time.
And he was a great punter.
Let me just tell you.
Punter. He was a great punter.
Yep. And he was on the receiving end of that. Was he in that game 73-0? Was he playing for the Redskins that day or no?
Yes, and they asked him.
That's unbelievable.
The first Washington's first drive of the game. They almost took the lead. They had the ball first. They drove down the field, and they almost scored a touchdown, which would have put them in the lead 7-0. But I think there was an interception. They asked Sammy Baugh, would the game have been different? Would the outcome of the game have been different if you had scored that first touchdown and took the lead 7-0? He said, right. Yes. The outcome would have been different. It would have been 73-7.
Look, I stumbled upon your boy Bart Starr again. He's in the toughest, best quarterbacks of the era by Forrest Gregg. Of course, he played with him, but he doesn't have him first. He's got him second. Best quarterbacks of my era, Forrest Gregg. Number one, Johnny Unitas. Okay? With Y.A. Tittle coming in at number three. That's a guy we don't talk about. He's on a lot of these lists in this book.
Wow.
And Otto Graham at four. Roger Staubach at number five.
Uh-huh.
Think about Staubach. He really didn't start playing until he was almost 30.
Yeah.
He did his stint in the Navy. I think he came out at like 26 or 27.
27.
He was on the bench for a couple of years.
He was rookie at 27.
He didn't really start until he was 30 years old almost.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal, really. People forget about that. The guy missed probably the best 5 years of his career easily.
Then he missed another year.
You know, that's how...
After he was finally named the starter, the following season, he
with
missed...
a separated shoulder.
He separated his shoulder. So he missed...
He was tremendous.
He missed a lot of... You know? He missed, like you said, he missed a good five, six years. Could have been added on to his career. Well, we got...
He was the most successful player off the field. Well, based on, I guess they made based on money wise, but he sold that real estate company for almost $700 million that he owned, Staubach Realty. Now he works for the company that he sold it to. Maybe not now, but he was working for them.
Uh huh.
And Charlie Waters said he called him up. Charlie Waters said his son passed away at the age of 18. Never got down to the bottom of it, what he died for. Charlie Waters, Arnie, played with the Cowboys. He was a safety. He was very good. Yeah. He wasn't a Hall of Famer, but he was very, very good. He was just under that. But he was coaching up at the University of Oregon, and his son passed away.
In his sleep,
and Staubach said, you could come work for me.
Yeah.
He said, I'll give you an office and everything. He said, you don't even have to come in for work. He gave him a salary and everything. Unbelievable.
Yeah. His son died in his sleep. Cody yep. Waters. Yeah, what a shame.
Yep.
And what a tragedy.
Well, yep. And that's what he said. Staubach, he credited Staubach. He said, he almost saved my life. Hollywood Henderson said the same thing.
Yeah.
You watch that video of go on and watch the one with Roger Staubach. What's this one the NFL made where they have the players and they talk about them for an hour? I can't think of what they're called.
Right.
Not America's Game. Those are the ones about the Super Bowl. But there's another series. Uh-huh. They talk about individual players.
Right.
And he said, I was in jail. You know, I was in, and he called me up.
Yeah.
And he said to me, you know, Thomas, you were a good guy, he says, before the drugs, you know, got to you. He says, but you, and he says, and at that time, I didn't know I was a good guy.
Yeah.
He said, imagine that. He said, at that time, I didn't know I was a good guy, he says.
Yeah.
And he says, he saved my life. Roger Staubach. Thomas Henderson talks about it. Imagine that.
And same thing with Bob Hayes,
unbelievable.
Right? Same thing with Bob Hayes.
Yep.
Yep. He came to
Drew Bob Pearson Hayes. Said, we didn't know how many guys that he did it to because he never talked about it, Staubach. He never talked about it. But he was tremendous, Staubach, tremendous. He was a tremendous leader, you know. It wasn't just about games and this. He didn't have great Super Bowls, Mark, you know. His stats weren't there, but he was just, there was a lot of, what do they call, other tangibles, intangible things that you couldn't measure, you know. He was just great. Absolutely tremendous.
Well, all we got left is running backs. So they got Walter Payton, Jim Brown, Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson. They got Gale Sayers, Steve Van Buren, Earl Campbell, Bronco Nagurski, Marion Motley. They got two guys here that I would take out. Lenny Moore was tremendous, very versatile, but he never had a 1,000-yard season. I think I would take, I mean, he's certainly Hall of Fame worthy. I met him at the Hall of Fame. Got a picture of him with my, yep, Lenny Moore. Probably one of the nicest guys I met at the Hall of Fame. Extremely nice guy. I got a real good picture of him with my son. There's two guys, and I got O.J. Simpson on this list. I got to disqualify him. I have to disqualify him. There's two guys. I don't know if I want to talk about O.J. Simpson. You know, he was one of my favorite players when he was playing. He was one of my favorite
players. I can see that.
Yeah. But you know who pegged him? Jim Brown said all that during his career when he played the real humble guy and he never spiked the ball or anything. He said that was all an act. Jim Brown said that was all an act. Yep. There's two guys that aren't on this list that I think you would agree with me, Dave. I think they have to be on this list. Tony Dorsett and Franco Harris are not on this list.
Yeah, I mean, look, we didn't talk about Bronco Nagurski yet. He wasn't on the other lists, you know, but he's on that list.
Yep, he is.
And I saw a clip on him recently, and, you know, there was a movie made, Anthony Hopkins was in it, Hearts of Atlantis, it was called. And it was about a guy that could see into the future, and he befriends this young boy, and he sees that the mother's very troubled and all. It's a very good movie. And he tells the kid a story about Bronco Nagurski
right.
in the movie. And it's actually a true story where he comes out of retirement, Nagurski hasn't played in 6 years.
That's right.
Plays the offensive line for the whole season, but towards the end of the year, they need him to run the ball. So they put him in at running back in two drives. And he took him to the playoff game or the championship game. And he says, and it was the way Anthony Hopkins tells the story to the young kid. And it's almost as if the kid, probably today a kid wouldn't even listen to it. They got no attention span. But this kid's listening to it like he's, you know, could see it. Like he could see it in front of his own eyes. And he's saying, and they gave it to Nagurski and he ran. And they kept giving it to him. And it's a great scene in that movie, Hearts of Atlantis. And they talk about it on the Bronco Nagurski feature and the NFL's greatest players in the 75th all-time team. And the guy, they couldn't stop him. And okay, it's one thing to come in and play the offensive line because he was a pretty good-sized guy. He was very physical. But to come in and play running back after not playing for 6 years, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Unreal.
To be able to play at all after not playing for 6 years is amazing. To play running back after not playing for 6 years, it's astonishing. But
I guess you can make a case for Tony Dorsett, Mark.
I think Tony Dorsett,
he was quite a player.
When he retired, he was number three. I think it was number three on the all-time list. And he's still in the top. I think he's still in the top 10. And he hasn't played in what, 30?
That was a cool. He was a little miffed when they brought Herschel Walker in. They talked about it in 86. He was at a car lot about 5 years ago, Tony Dorsett, doing a signing in Danbury, Connecticut. So I drove over there. And I said to him, they called it the dream backfield. And he was sitting down signing cards. And he looked up at me and he goes, yeah. He goes, the dream backfield. Whose dream was that? He goes, not mine. And he just really, he ended up going to the Broncos. It was kind of a sin. At the end of the, it was almost like Walter Payton going to another team. It was and then, back then it was not as common as it is today, where guys just go to other teams. But he was really great. I mean, he was a very undersized guy, and he could run in between the tackles. He was tougher than you think. And I think, like, Landry kind of put him on a pitch count through his career. He didn't overuse him.
They
really overused Earl Campbell. That guy got burnt out, Earl Campbell. But Tony Dorsett, no. I don't think he was more than 190 pounds, Mark.
Maybe not even, 185 maybe. And he didn't like the fact he didn't like the fact that Landry had him on a pitch count. But then years later, after he got older, he kind of changed his mind, and he said, now looking back on it, he said, Landry may have prolonged my career because he saw And Franco Harris, the other guy, when he retired, he was I think he was third or fourth on the all-time list. And he was number one.
Was he?
Postseason. Until Emmitt Smith broke his record.
I thought he went as high as two, Mark, at one point. Was he or
at
no?
At one point,
because I remember Jim Brown started.
That's right.
Started chiming in about Franco Harris, saying that he runs out of bounds.
Yep.
I would never do that. There was a little friction there.
Yep. Jim Brown didn't like it that he ran out of bounds, but the guy was. He was number one postseason. He had the most yardage in postseason until Emmitt Smith broke his record. So I don't know how you keep him off the list. Yeah, he was number two. There was, he was very close to breaking Jim Brown's record.
Who are the other runners on that list, Mark?
Peyton, Jim Brown, Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson, Gale Sayers, Steve Van Buren, Earl Campbell, Bronco Nagurski, and Marion Motley.
I mean, there's a guy we didn't talk about at all too much, Steve Van Buren.
Yep.
Dominant.
He was a dominant player during his era.
It's hard to take any of those guys off of that list, Mark, other than if I had to remove a guy, as much as he was like the Paul Zimmerman theory, as great as he was for those years, probably if I had to remove anybody, it might be Earl Campbell. He was tremendous, though. It would be very difficult to remove him. I'm sorry, it would be.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was very one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was still, you couldn't stop him.
But he burnt them. Couldn't stop him. Like you said, they burnt them out quick, you know. He had about five good seasons, and he burnt out. Well, Lenny Moore is the other guy they had on the list. They had Lenny Moore on the list.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to look up Van Buren. I never really looked into the guy. I mean, I know he was, I think he was with Philadelphia, wasn't he?
Yep.
He's a legend in Philadelphia, him and Chuck Bednarik.
Yes.
Those two guys. And I think he coached, didn't he, Van Buren?
I'm not sure if he coached or not.
I feel like he even coached the Packers at one point. Let me see.
I don't remember him coaching. But
yeah, I'll have to look it up. No, I might be thinking of Van Brocklin.
Yeah, Van Brocklin coached. But Van
Buren.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
In the late 40s, the Eagles, I think they won two championships in the late 40s. And the offense was built around Steve Van Buren. They had a game where it snowed,
right.
Like a blizzard, championship game. It was like a blizzard, and he gained well over 100 yards in that game, I think. He was the only one that could stay on his feet. Everyone else was slipping all over the place.
It was Van Buren, yes. You're right, yeah. Arnie. It was Van Brocklin for the coaching, but Van Buren, 6 all-NFL seasons, 464 points scored, 8 years. With 523 yards receiving, and he rushed for almost 6,000 yards, which was a lot back then.
Yep.
He played halfback, quarterback, and running back, they claim. All three positions.
Wow. I didn't know he played quarterback.
He surpassed 1,000 yards rushing twice.
Yeah, not too many guys were doing that back then.
And in 45, he hit the triple crown. He led the league in rushing, scoring, and kickoff returns. Imagine that.
Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. He was tremendous, tremendous player. Maybe the best running back of his era.
Yes.
Might have been the best running back of his era. Yep.
It's hard to remove any of those guys off of that list there. But you're right, Mark. They cut it from 19 to 10.
Yeah.
Imagine that?
Yep.
You can't argue with those 10, though, I don't think, Mark. And if you had to pick two, like you said, you would have picked Peyton and Jim Brown. You know, the first time I even heard about Jim Brown, I was watching a movie with my father. I think it was The Dirty Dozen with Lee Marvin and a bunch, you know, that Army movie.
Right. Dirty
Jim
Dozen.
Brown was in it.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
At the end, he throws the hand grenades down the thing. And my father says it very nonchalantly, sitting in the chair, he goes, boy, he says, you want to see this guy run? He said, this guy was played professional football. You should have seen this guy run, he says to me. That was I was probably maybe 8 years old, 9 years old. It was my first recollection of hearing about Jim Brown, you know. What year did he retire, Mark?
His final season was 1965.
Okay.
And it was because of the movie. When he went into the movies, and he didn't show up at training camp because he was making a movie. And I think Paul Brown was still the coach at that time. And he said, you're going to get fined for every day that you don't show up at training camp. You're going to get fined. And so Jim Brown said, well, then I retire. I'm done.
It was in June of 1967 that they were filming the movie, Mark.
Yeah. Well, that might have been a different.
Of course.
Probably. It might not have been that movie, but I remember.
It could have been a dish, right? It could have been because he was in other movies prior to that. You're right.
Yep.
Imagine that.
I didn't.
Well, you know what? He was probably figuring, why get all banged up? I can make money making these movies. I'm meeting all these beautiful women and all this other stuff. And he was running, you know. How many championships did they win while he was there, Jim Brown? Do you know, Mark, off the top of your head?
I think only one.
Did they win any?
1964.
Imagine that.
1957 was his rookie season. I think there was a year there in the late 50s where they played the Lions. I think the Lions beat
them. Really?
And then in 64, they played the Colts, and the Colts were heavily favored, and they beat the Colts 27-0. And then the following year, the Browns were the defending champions. They played the Packers, and the Packers beat them, but it was a close game. 23-12. And that was Jim Brown's final game, that championship game against the Packers. So I think he played in 3 championship games, and they won one of them in 64.
Imagine that. It's unbelievable. Because they had Paul Brown there. Jim Brown was in a great quarterback. You know, there used to be a lot of debate, Mark, over who was greater, the 50s, the Colts of the late 50s, or the Packers of the 60s. A lot of people used to talk about that.
Well, it's hard to beat those 1960s Packers teams. They had some tremendous teams. Well, I think we wrapped it up.
Yeah, that's it. I want to read you one more list before we go, Mark. It was a toughest offensive lineman since we talked about the offense this week.
Uh-huh.
Selected by Bob Lilly. Okay. Toughest offensive lineman, ten of them he's got. And, of course, number one, we already talked about this, Jim Parker, at the top of the list.
Yep.
And then you're not going to believe the next two. This number two is Gale Gillingham from the Packers.
Uh-huh.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
So he must have gave Lilly a hard time because he was a guard. Well, he was a guard.
Yeah.
Yep. And then at number three, he's got Tom Mack. Uh-huh. Tom Mack was a very strong guy. Wasn't he in one of these strongmen competitions, Tom Mack? He was one of these real strong guys.
Yeah, Tom I think Mack. He was just naturally strong. Yep.
Yeah, there was something going on there with him. He's got Forrest Gregg at number four, who was a tackle. And at number five, Mark, going back to your Miami Dolphins team, he's got Bob Kuchenberg in there. Kuchenberg at five.
Right.
Okay. He's got Greg Larson at six. Mick Tinglehoff at number seven, the center for the Vikings.
Right.
You know, Mick Tinglehoff, look at his – I think he played 20 years or something crazy. He never missed a single game.
Yeah.
And I watched his Hall of Fame speech. It was extremely, extremely sad. Did you ever see it? I don't think he really knows what's going on. They pull the thing off the bust.
Yeah.
And he's standing behind it.
Right.
And he makes a face like, you know, and he doesn't even realize he's behind it. Well, Fran Tarkington brings him up to the microphone. Fran Tarkington presents him.
Yeah.
And as he's walking up to the microphone, you could hear Fran Tarkington say to him, do you want to thank the fish? And he says, no. And Fran Tarkington composes himself and he says, you know, Mick is a man of a few words, but a lot of action.
Uh-huh.
And he says it took him 37 years. And Fran Tarkington starts crying.
Yeah.
Go watch Mick Tinglehoff's induction into the Hall of Fame. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I got
Well, anyway, Lily's got him at number seven.
Right.
And then he's got Fuzzy Thurston, Gene Upshaw, and Jim Otto to round out the list.
Uh-huh.
But think about it. He's got he's got three Packers in there, Mark.
Yeah.
Three out of ten are Packers.
Yeah.
Imagine
I can believe that.
Yep.
Kuchenberg. Kuchenberg was very good. He's been on the Hall of Fame ballot a few times.
When Lilly played against him in 72 in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That 71 year. That was Kuchenberg's rookie year. So Kuchenberg was a rookie going up against Lilly in that game. Imagine that.
Yeah. Then they played them on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
1973. Played Miami on Thanksgiving.
Yes, you're right. It was kind of a close game.
14-7, yeah. Yeah.
Mark knows.
14-7. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good, Mark. That was a good list. That was good. A lot of same guys, you know, in a lot of these positions. You notice that? Like a lot of the same players.
Yeah, consistent.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.